Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Wednesday, July the 25th. Do we still enjoy all the freedoms guaranteed to us in our Constitution, or have we been losing those rights to free speech and free assembly, for example, because of security fears in a post-9/11 world? Is there anything wrong with giving up rights for better security? Well, our guest this hour says there's plenty wrong with it, especially when the rights are taken away from us under the guise of security and we're ordinary citizens are arrested or taken away their rights for disagreeing with policies of the current administration, like a woman who is questioned by the Secret Service because she put up a yard sign saying, "Mr. Bush, you're fired," or someone who's reported to the FBI because he's reading an article called "Weapons of Mass Stupidity" while standing in line at a coffee shop, or a group of Milwaukee peace activists delayed on a flight to go to a protest because apparently they're going to a protest. And how about the guy who is arrested for assault for criticizing Vice President Dick Cheney for his Iraq War policies? Well, we'll talk about these examples and more found in the new book, You Have No Rights, Stories of America in an Age of Repression, written by our guest, Matt Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine. And we will welcome your questions and maybe your own stories of repression and what can be done about it, or maybe even your defense of the actions that Matt is reporting on. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or talk at wpr.org. Matt will be giving a free public talk on his book tomorrow night at the Madison Overture Center in the Wisconsin studio at 7 o'clock tomorrow night, and he joins us this morning in our studio. Good morning.
Hey, Joy. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, You Have No Rights. Where did that title come from?
Well, I got the title from a story I was reporting on two brothers named Yasser and Hani Ibrahim, who had been in the United States for many years. They're from Egypt. They were in an apartment in New York 3 weeks after 9/11. You can imagine why law enforcement is concerned about people who are here, who aren't citizens and were from Egypt after 9/11. That isn't my concern. My concern is what happened to these brothers. The police and INS and NYPD and FBI knock on their door and come on in their apartment. They arrest them. They don't read them their rights. They send them to a holding pen for 24 hours where they're not even allowed to go to the bathroom. And then they're taken to the Metropolitan Detention Center. And as they're being led into the detention center, there's a big American flag on the wall, on the concrete wall there, and they're let in, and the guards bang their heads against the wall where the American flag is and continue to beat them. And then they play a little sadistic game with the brothers whose ankles are chained together. The guards will step on the chain between the ankles and make them fall down, and they say, "Get up." And then they'll step on the chain again and say, "Get up." Finally, after a lot of this physical and verbal abuse, one of the brothers asked someone at the detention center there, "What about our human rights here?" And the response came back, "You have no rights." And eerily, I've heard that almost that exact phrase, word for word, attributed to U.S. guards down in Guantanamo when I read the depositions of some of the detainees down in Guantanamo.
Yeah. And the stories you have are dealing with ordinary citizens and actions taken against ordinary citizens. And I gave a few examples in the introduction, but there are page after page after page of them here. How did you find all these stories?
Well, I started paying attention after 9/11. I'm a student of Howard Zinn's, and I take his critique of U.S. policy seriously. And he warns us, as do other progressive historians, that in times of repression, in times of war and lead-ups to war, we got to watch for our civil liberties being infringed upon. So I tried to be alert to it. And then maybe I wasn't as alert to it as I should have been, because I was given a talk up in Sauk City in October of 2001, right before Bush launched the Afghan war. And when I was done talking, someone raised a question and asked if I knew about this guy, Todd Persia. Well, I'd never heard of Todd Persia, and that always makes me uncomfortable when I'm speaking in public and someone asks me something I know nothing about. So I confessed I didn't know anything about it. And they said, well, he was a cartoonist for the local paper up in the Sauk City area, and he had just gotten fired. And I then called up Todd Persia the next day to ask what he'd gotten fired for. And he told me for two cartoons. One was when the media banged the drums for war, it's hard to hear other voices. And the other cartoon was about Big Brother and our civil liberties. And, you know, this wasn't his livelihood. He was just getting paid $25 a throw. But it was his way of expressing his political beliefs. And at that point, I said, wow, if that's happening to Todd Persia in Sauk City, Wisconsin, there must be other things going on. So I discovered stories of prize-winning columnists who were fired shortly after 9/11 for daring to criticize Bush for not returning to Washington on the day of 9/11. Mm-hmm. One guy said Bush was clinging to Barbara's skirts. Another said he'd skedaddled. And, you know, an editor fired, a publisher fires one of these columnists, and then 3 days later, the editor writes a front-page editorial apologizing for daring to publish such dissenting views about the commander-in-chief and our president. So I just started collecting one after another, and for a cover story in The Progressive, I mean, and one of the stories was about Donna Wonka, a woman who runs the Art Car Museum in Dallas, Texas. And this was a couple months after 9/11. She was getting ready to open the museum in about an hour, and she hears a knock on the door, and there's an FBI and Secret Service agent there, and she says, "We're not open right now. Can I help you?" And they said, "Yeah, we hear there's some anti-American art here on the walls." And she let him in, and they recorded all the names of the artists and their phone numbers and addresses, and they didn't seem to see the irony of one of the exhibits, which was a camera in the center of a room that rotated 360 degrees to illustrate that everyone's being spied upon. God.
Now, is there something, though, to be said, Matt, in a post 9/11 world that some civil liberties, some rights have to be at least carefully vetted, regulated in some way. People have to be checked out. Threats have to be taken seriously in order to maintain our safety and security.
Well, I certainly don't think any free speech rights need to be curtailed in the time of even an emergency. That it's all the more important for people to have their First Amendment rights to express themselves. And a lot of what we're seeing in this country is a real crackdown on that. And certainly after 9/11, it was severe. I mean, you mentioned this story of this guy named Mark Schultz, who all he was doing was standing in line at the Caribou Coffee Shop in Atlanta, Georgia. It was kind of like a day like last Saturday when a new Harry Potter book was coming on, so he needed to get gassed up with caffeine before he goes to his bookshop. And he was reading this thing that his father had downloaded from the web. It was an article called Weapons of Mass Stupidity. It was about Fox News and what a propaganda organ it is for the Bush administration and for war. And evidently someone who was in line didn't really think it was appropriate for him to be reading Weapons of Mass Stupidity. So 3 days later, the FBI show up at Mark Schultz's bookstore, and they said, "Were you at the Caribou Coffee Shop 3 days ago?" And he said, "Yeah, why?" "We heard you were reading some kind of left-wing editorial." As someone who writes left-wing editorials, I thought that
yikes,
was a little
yeah.
disturbing.
And then I also brought up the example. Some woman has a yard sign that says, "Mr. Bush, you're fired," and the Secret Service shows up at her house.
Yeah, they're all. This woman's named Renee Jensen. There are all sorts of people like Renee Jensen. She, and I really take my hat off to people who, you know, have been having these signs in their yards. And, you know, the signs often get vandalized. And sometimes, as in the case of Renee Jensen, of Elkins, West Virginia, she gets a visit from the Secret Service. Here are some of the signs she had in her yard. "Mr. Bush, you're fired. Mr. Ashcroft, we prefer our America remain the home of the free and the brave. Mr. Cheney, what you sow, you shall reap. Those who destroy the earth will be destroyed."
Ah, was that considered a threat?
I guess that's what they did. Here was another one that, "Love one another, war is dead wrong." But yeah, they asked her about the Cheney thing, and she said, you know, it's from Revelations. I've got no desire to destroy anybody. I'm just quoting out of the Bible.
Yeah. How about sometimes civil liberties or rights are taken away simply because someone's first name is Mohammed?
Not a good time to be named Mohammed in this country.
Yeah, wasn't there a waiter who was at a Bush function?
This is the story of Mohammed Farron, who was a waiter at the Hyatt Hotel in the harbor of Baltimore. He'd been working there 7 years. Bush is having a banquet fundraiser at the Hyatt. Mohammed Farron is supposed to be on duty for the banquet, so he reports to work, goes down to his locker, changes his clothes into his uniform, goes to the banquet room, and just as he's heading there, the manager, followed by a couple Secret Service agents, come running up to him. And the manager says, "Is your name Mohammed?" And Mohammed Farron says, "Well, you know, I've been working for you here for about 7 years. You know, my name's Mohammed." And then he says, "Well, you're going to have to go." And so they marched Mohammed Farron back down to his locker, watched him change his clothes, and marched him out of the hotel simply because his name was Mohammed.
What's the backstory of this guy who was arrested because he told Vice President Cheney he didn't like his war policies?
So this is another guy, and this wasn't right after 9/11. This was last summer, if you can believe it, in Beaver Creek, Colorado. The guy's name's Steve Howards. He's walking across an open-air mall in Beaver Creek. I think that's near Vail. And who is in the open-air mall shaking hands but the Vice President of the United States? Maybe Cheney thought this was a sufficiently conservative place that he wouldn't get hassled. And Steve Howards had always told himself that if he ever saw Bush or Cheney in person, that he would have the guts to go up to them and tell them what he thought about their policies. So Steve Howards does this. He goes up to within 5 or 3 feet of the Vice President and says, "Mr. Vice President, I think your policies on Iraq are reprehensible." And then Steve Howards backs off and goes away. He's got his 8-year-old kid. He's taking his 8-year-old kid to Suzuki piano lessons. Well, 10 minutes later, the Secret Service come up to Steve Howards and his kid, and they ask Steve Howards, "Did you assault the Vice President of the United States?" And Steve Howards says, "No, I was just exercising my rights here under the Constitution to tell the Vice President what I thought about the Iraq War that he and the President have gotten us into." That didn't satisfy the Secret Service. They instantly said, "No, you assaulted the Vice President of the United States. You're under arrest." And Steve Howard, and they handcuffed him. And Steve Howard says, "Well, what's supposed to happen with my 8-year-old son here?" And they said, "Well, Secret Service will, social services will take care of him." Fortunately, the kid was able to find his mom nearby, but Steve Howard was taken away and jailed for several hours, and then he was let go, and eventually the charges were dropped. But he is suing the Secret Service. A big part of this book is revealing that the Secret Service of the United States is not only in the business of protecting the president and the vice president from assassination. They are now in the business of protecting the vice president and president from dissent.
We are talking with Matt Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine and author of the new book, You Have No Rights: Stories of America in an Age of Repression, which tells the stories of mainly ordinary citizens who have been scrutinized because of their political expressions, primarily their civil liberties violated since 9/11. And we wonder if this bothers you or not, or if you have your own story. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. We'll also talk about what can be done about this after this break. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up this afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. After 5, Ben and his guests will look at education and race, a look at how concepts of race, intelligence, and testing are affecting student performance. That's after 5 this afternoon. We're talking with Matt Rothschild. You know him as the editor of The Progressive Magazine and one of our regular guests on our Friday Week in Review. And he's also the author of a new book, You Have No Rights: Stories of America in an Age of Repression. Matt will be talking about his book tomorrow night at the Overture Center in Madison, a free public talk at 7 o'clock tomorrow night in the Wisconsin studio at Madison's Overture Center. And he's talking with us now about the stories in this book and welcoming your questions and comments. Matt, is this getting better or worse today? I mean, was it something that is kind of waning now that more and more time has passed since 9/11, or is it still going strong?
Well, I think to some degree it's getting a little better. You know, after 9/11, it didn't seem like anyone could talk publicly. Celebrities were gagged almost. You know, the Dixie Chicks had their albums burned. Now they're getting all sorts of awards. You had, you know, people being kicked off the air, and now, you know, Bill Maher's back on the air. So to that extent, it's a little better. But, you know, still people are, a teacher I just wrote about in the Progressive a couple months ago named Michael Baker was not fired, essentially, but told he couldn't teach anymore in April simply because he showed in his high school class, and he'd been teaching for 25 years in Lincoln, Nebraska, he showed the HBO documentary Baghdad ER. Which is not an incendiary film. It's not an anti-American film. It's a film that National Review, the Republican right-wing magazine, called refreshingly earnest, but it wasn't refreshingly earnest enough for the school board in Lincoln, Nebraska. So he was booted. Or then there's the case of an 80-year-old poet in Nassau County, Long Island, named Max Wheat. And he this spring was supposed to be the first poet laureate of Nassau County. Last year they decided they were going to have a poet laureate of their county, and he won the contest, and he was coming to get his award one Monday at the county building, and they took it away from him because that morning some of the county commissioners read a little book of anti-war poems he'd written. So things aren't that great yet. And then for Arab Americans or Muslim Americans simply trying to get back into the United States, I've talked to a guy named Zachariah Mohammed Reed, who six times in the last 7 months has been stopped coming across the border. And once he was asked about a letter to the editor he'd written to the Toledo Blade, which was critical of Bush's policy. So people are still suffering.
And a lot more stories to talk about, lots of callers, but before we go to the phones, why do you think it's important to tell all these stories?
Well, I tell these stories not to depress people and not to make people scared. I tell them these stories to alert them to the facts that the Bush administration is systematically trying to take our rights away and that we need to stand up for our rights. Several of the people in this book fought back. They sued. They won. They're championing our rights. The ACLU is suing constantly almost to restore our rights. And we need to stand up for our rights now before more of them are taken away.
Yeah. To the phones we go. Mike and Racine is first. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Ed. Nice being on the radio. Like I say, I'm one of these guys. I'm a local president. I was very active in the 2004 campaign against Bush. And when I applied for a passport to go to Canada, I was required to have five forms of picture ID. And, you know, you know anybody that's got five forms of picture ID?
Well, I don't. I know it's been incredibly difficult to travel for many people in this country, even to Canada or to Mexico, which used to be easy. Five kinds of IDs, first time I've heard that.
Yeah, I got the letter from them. I was up there for a union convention, and everybody just laughed. They just, you know, they've never heard of that. You know, the Canadian passport officials, when I went in without them, they just said, "What did you do wrong?"
Yeah. Well, what do you think you did wrong? Why do you think that was, Mike?
I was at a Bush rally in Racine, and I was wearing three of us were wearing a T-shirt that said "liar" on it.
Ah, yeah. T-shirts. T-shirts aren't popular with security officials, are they, Matt? Lots of T-shirt stories.
Yeah,
people getting kicked out of places.
Plenty of those. Yeah. The classic is the case of Nicole and Jeff Rank, who were at the Charleston, West Virginia Capitol on July 4th of all days, July 4th, 2004, and Bush was speaking at the Capitol, and people on the Capitol grounds were selling pro-Bush T-shirts. Well, Nicole and Jeff Rank didn't have a pro-Bush T-shirt on. They had a Bush that said, "Love America, hate Bush," and they were told to leave. They didn't leave. They were told again to leave, and they said, "We have our First Amendment rights to be here," and they just sat down. So they were arrested then for trespassing, and the city apologized to them because the city attorney finally read the First Amendment, but they have sued, and through the ACLU lawsuit, a document just appeared, and it appeared in a White House manual, a White House advance team manual. The ACLU got hold of this, and the advance team manual says you should get the protesters away from the site and of the vice president or the president when they are traveling. If you can't do that, you should form a rally squad of people to stand in front of them with their signs, and if they are shouting slogans, you should get the rally squad to chant and drown them out with chants of USA, USA, USA. It also said they should recruit them from fraternities, sororities, and athletic teams and young Republican groups. So.
Yeah, there was a guy. Tell us about the Platteville guy who was arrested for disturbing the peace because of a sign that he held up during, I think he was trying to, a Bush motorcade was going to be going by.
Yeah, Bush is coming through Platteville, I think it was 2004 election, and Frank Vandenbosch, who was a peace activist, local peace activist around there, had distilled his distaste for the Bush administration down to four letters, F-U-G-W. And so he's standing there with his F-U-G-W sign, and before the Bush caravan gets there, he is arrested. And he's arrested for disturbing the peace. I called up the police officer and said, "Why'd you arrest Frank Vandenbosch simply for expressing his First Amendment rights here?" And he said, "Well, he was disturbing the peace." I said, "How do you know he was disturbing the peace?" And the police officer said, "Well, a couple of people next to him said his sign disturbed them, therefore he was disturbing the peace."
Another story that caught my eye had to do with a group of Wisconsin folks who wanted to fly somewhere to protest the School of the Americas. And these Milwaukee protesters didn't get off the ground when they wanted to. I think that was they were, you know, questioned and brought aside and then delayed enough that they missed the flight.
Yeah, and this may not seem that odd now, but at the time that it happened, which was April 2002, I'd never heard of the no-fly rule or the no-fly list. And this was the first inkling that I got that there was such a thing, because there was this group that was trying to go to as you were saying, to Washington, D.C. to protest School of America's U.S. policy on Columbia. And they were questioned so long that they missed their flight and couldn't leave until the next morning. And one of the sheriff's deputies said, "You're probably being stopped because you're a peace group and you're protesting against your country." Isn't that amazing?
Oh, it is amazing. And that's why would they be on a no-fly list ordinary citizens protesting something, you know, had nothing to do with 9/11.
Well, no one can figure out why anyone's on these no-fly lists. I mean, they aren't publishing the criteria for getting on them. They're not, you know, releasing information as to how you get off of them. I mean, I would recommend to anybody who thinks they're on a no-fly list to contact your local representative in the House of Representatives and see if that person can help you. But I've been talking to people who've tried to get help and still haven't been able to get off that list.
Thanks to Mike for the call. Next is Boyd in Milwaukee. Hi, Boyd.
Good morning, Joy, and good morning to you, Matt. It's a pleasure to talk with you. I'll just share with you a little story, and I'll lead up to a question. We have in Milwaukee every so many months a gallery night, and a few years ago they actually had an exhibit where they had works on the Patriot Act, and one of those stories you recommended, you told about that one guy in Caribou, they actually had made reference to that. And my question is this, me, because I study cartooning and I'm working on a graphic novel, I think comics and art is a good way to kind of express, you know, what's going on in the country and be a source of information. And with the media, the mainstream media, becoming so centralized, is would you say the Bush administration is cracking down on cartoonists and artists, for that matter, like they did in the old Soviet Union?
Well, there's a book out, I think it's called Censored, that is a book of censored cartoons since 2001. And Mike Konopacki, who's a local cartoonist here in Madison, Wisconsin, has done a lot of work and put up a traveling exhibit, I think, on cartoons that got censored since 9/11. So I do think the censors out there, you know, they are aware of the power of cartoons and the power of art, and have been coming down heavy on that, too.
Talking with Matt Rothschild, Matthew Rothschild, on the cover of his book, You Have No Rights.
Matt is okay.
Stories of America in an Age of Repression, a book that details some 82 stories of ordinary citizens who have had their civil liberties trampled on. And we're welcoming your questions for Matt, maybe your own stories. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Dave in Menominee is with us. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I just thought how ironic it was that shortly after 9/11, we heard from President Bush, I don't know how many times, he would look right in the camera and say, "They're trying to take away your rights," you know. And the only thing that threatens our rights, of course, is our own government. I just wanted to know, is the last time, after 9/11, I had to go, when I'd go to the doctor, I had to sign waivers about my medical records, and I just thought how strange that was and wanted to know, you know, if Matt knew who's looking at these records now. Is it employers or insurance companies or...
I don't know. I'm sorry to say, Dave, I don't know about medical records. I know a little bit about financial records. I know about the spying that the government's doing on us, but I don't know about medical records. But you're absolutely right about the irony here that Bush says he's protecting our rights and our freedoms when he goes to war against Iraq or Afghanistan. The epitome of this irony was three teachers in Medford, Oregon were wearing a T-shirt. All that the T-shirt said was "protect our civil liberties." They were at a public fairgrounds, county fairgrounds, when Bush was giving a talk. They were allowed in. They had tickets. They got tickets the correct way. The advance team ripped up their tickets and said, "You have to go." All that they had on their T-shirt was "protect our civil liberties." And one of the advance team members from the Bush administration said the T-shirt was obscene.
Wow. Brian in Whitehall, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. I can't remember who made the comment. I think it was Ben Franklin, something about, if you allow your rights to be discarded for security purposes, you end up having no rights at all. And you have to hand it to the Bush administration. They've been fairly brilliant promulgating the culture of fear in this country and the culture of jingoistic patriotism, where you can't allow any criticism against the U.S. that would affect its national identity or national, I guess, morale would be the correct word, that would affect the so-called war on terror.
Well, I mean, I think Brian is hitting it, because the Bush administration peddles fear. That's all they've got going right now, is to scare people. It was Attorney General Ashcroft, former Attorney General, now looks a little better from the hospital bed, actually, but who had said those who scare freedom-loving peoples with the phantoms of lost liberty are giving aid and comfort to the nation's enemies, which is absolutely the constitutional definition of treason, a capital offense. And they're still peddling the fear, and they're still using their executive powers here to trample on our rights. And it filters down to law enforcement. There was one law enforcement official in California who said, if people are protesting a war against terrorism, that's just about an act of terrorism itself. And so there's this authoritarian attitude that flows from the top and goes down to the lower ranks of law enforcement, and actually throughout the public, too. I mean, there's segments of the public who buy into that.
Yeah. There's also, you make note of that slogan, you're either with us or you're against us, which sort of puts a chill out, you know, without necessarily, you don't have to be arrested. You may not say something to begin with.
Yeah, or Ari Fleischer, the former press secretary, saying, watch what you say. You know, I mean, that's the idea. And now, you know, the president just issued an executive order in the last few weeks that said, if you're protesting Bush policy in Iraq or the reconstruction economic and political of the Iraqi government, according to the Bush policy, and you are at a risk, significant risk of engaging in a violent act, the Treasury Secretary of the United States can freeze your assets, including your home. So there's all the repression continues.
Yeah. Well, more callers. Jay in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Kathleen. Thank you.
Yes, Joy.
Sorry. Just a few questions here for your speaker. Are you being audited currently by the IRS?
No, I hope not. Not that I know of.
Has your book been banned from being published?
Nope.
Okay, is this program being monitored by any government authority or being shut down upon what you say?
Don't know if it's being monitored. We're still on.
Okay, it is still on. So you are currently free to express your opinions, and not only that, publish a book of your opinions. Now, granted, the vignettes that you're giving, okay, there has been a lot of confusion over the Patriot Act. There has been a tremendous individual confusion, and you even see it at the airports, between the security officers not knowing what to confiscate, what not to confiscate. But in general, your hypothesis is incorrect, and I think the actual proof positive of that is that you exist, your theory exists, your hypothesis exists, and your book exists. And so to hear these callers comparing it to the Soviet Union, and even, God forbid, Nazi Germany, ad nauseum, is ridiculous. And I'd like you to comment on that.
Yeah. Sure. Certainly, all our rights haven't been taken away yet. I have the First Amendment right to be here. We are not yet in a fascist government. I've been reluctant to use the F word for years and years and years. But clearly, the clouds of repression are not only on the horizon, some of them are overhead. The edifice of repression has been constructed here by the Bush administration so that the president, under the Military Commissions Act, can call any one of us by his own authority, an enemy combatant, and throw us into jail. And if we're not a U.S. citizen, that person can languish in jail and never see a judge or a courtroom again. Under the Patriot Act, the police can go into our home when we're not there and go through all our belongings and put a recording device on our computer and leave and not tell us about it for quite a long while. And the NSA can spy on us, even without a warrant, according to the Bush administration. So what rights fundamentally do we still have? I mean, the fact that they haven't come, that the guards aren't out the door here and about to arrest me as soon as I walk out, doesn't mean that everything is hunky-dory in the United States of America.
Nobody's saying hunky-dory, okay? But let me ask you a question. Did 9/11 occur, in your opinion?
9/11 occurred.
Okay, was it the act of Muslim terrorists who committed 9/11. Is that your hypothesis? Is that your are you in agreement with that?
I am, but listen, I'm not your witness and you're not my prosecutor.
Right.
I know exactly what happened on 9/11. I'm trying to explain what is going on here in this country, and you're trying to say that nothing's going on, and that's false.
I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that we are in a very unique situation. We are in a wartime situation we face an internal enemy, as you are seeing in Europe, as you see in England on probably a weekly basis, that there's internal cells, as you see here in the United States. We are on a wartime footing, and you're right. There are some rights that have to be abrogated during wartime. You are absolutely
I did not
correct.
Say no. that rights need to be abrogated. Okay. Should people not be able to go up to the Vice President of the United States and say to his face that his policies on Iraq are reprehensible? Is that okay by you to have that person arrested? Is it okay to arrest people simply to have signs that say the war is wrong and that they don't like the President of the United States? I mean, what kind of country is that?
That's what we're talking about here. That's what we're talking about, these stories in the book.
Well, those could be perceived as aggressive acts. There's no question. Okay, but I'm just saying your hypothesis overall. Yes, you're right. There's individual vignettes of people. You know, Nixon administration. You know, audited people who were his political enemies. You know what happens? It's happened since the dawn of time that people take action against their political enemies. Okay, all I'm saying is your hypothesis, I feel, is flawed. Because all you're doing is you're looking at specific vignettes, and yet the overall hypothesis, it does not seem to be backed up by the actual day-to-day existence of people here in the United States.
So civil liberties are not under any kind of scrutiny or threat, is what you're saying. That's the hypothesis. You don't think there's any problem?
The people of the United States are under scrutiny. I have no question about it.
All right, Matt, your hypothesis is incorrect because you're able to publish this book and you have free speech, so therefore.
Well, I mean, if the criterion for whether we are free or not is whether I can appear on WHA on your program, Joy, and not get arrested, that is putting the bar pretty low. No offense to the program here. I mean, you know, when I look at all these stories, I've got 82 in this book, and there are hundreds more out there, and I've reported on more than 100 other ones of people whose rights have been violated. There's a guy named Brett Bercy who not only was his rights violated, he was convicted. All that he was doing was at Columbia, South Carolina, at the airport there, he had a sign that said no more war for oil, and Bush was there fundraising for Lindsey Graham, and a lot of people had pro-Lindsey Graham signs and pro-Bush signs there. But Brett Bercy was approached by the Secret Service. They weren't approached by the Secret Service, and he was told, you can't be here. You've got to go to a free speech zone a half mile or a mile or a mile and a half away. And he said, I thought America was a free speech zone. Well, it wasn't a free speech zone that day because he was arrested. He was arrested for not going to the free speech zone. Ultimately, the local prosecutor dropped the charges, but the U.S. attorney with the improbable name and identity of Strom Thurmond Jr., son of the segregationist senator, arrested him and charged him with violating the assassinations and plots against the president statute and got a conviction because Brett Bercy would not obey the Secret Service, and so he was fined $500. You know, this whole idea that we can protest where the president or vice president can see us is no longer relevant in this country. And this is why we don't have our First Amendment rights, because right now the Secret Service can say, you can't protest where they can see you or hear you. You've got to go to that free speech zone 2 miles away. Well, what good is it to petition your government for a redress of grievances if the governors themselves are shielded from your protest signs?
Jay, thank you for the call. We're talking with Matt Rothschild, author of You Have No Rights, Stories of America in an Age of Repression. Matt is also the editor of the Progressive magazine. 1-800-642-1234 or 263-1890. We welcome your questions, maybe your own stories of repression, talking about what can be done about this as well. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up, Kathleen Dunn is with you. President Bush has threatened to veto the Children's Health and Medicare Protection Act, which supporters claim would block cuts to Medicare while expanding insurance coverage for low-income children. Kathleen and her guests will talk about this coming up after 9 o'clock. We're talking with Matt Rothschild, who is the author of a new book, You Have No Rights, Stories of America in an Age of Repression. Matt will be giving a free public talk on his book tomorrow night in Madison at Madison's Overture Center in the Wisconsin studio at 7 o'clock. For more information, 608-257-4626, 257-4626. The book tells the story of more than 80 ordinary citizens who had their mainly freedom of speech rights violated because Many of them disagreed with the policies of the Bush administration. Our next caller is Carly in Kenosha. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just want to say that guy that just called before, he does not understand how serious the situation is. Am I being dragged off to Guantanamo Bay yet? No, not yet. But when I was in high school, when I was a junior in high school and 9/11 happened, our school started enacting, you had to say the pledge. You had to stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance. I had not been saying the Pledge of Allegiance since I was in eighth grade for personal reasons. And once 9/11 happened, they began threatening me with detention, and I was sent to the principal's office where I was said I would have to say it or I would have to write a five-page essay why I was not saying it. I called my mother, who we are both against, my whole family is against the war and have been from the beginning, and just completely disgusted with how our country has reacted by taking away our First Amendment rights. And for the rest of the year, I had to go and sit in the hallway. If I did not want to stand for the pledge, I had to go out and sit in the hallway.
Yeah, I was getting worried for a second there when I heard the sirens going off when you're making your comments, Carly, but I guess everything's okay. Matt?
Well, there has been crackdown in the schools. I'm glad, Carly, I'm glad you called, Carly, on that because, you know, there have been several students who also, not exactly for the Pledge of Allegiance, but say for wearing a T-shirt that says Bush is an international terrorist. They were told to go home. One guy fought that and won. This was in Dearborn, Michigan. And another young woman, Katie Sierra, was wearing a sign that said, you know, racism, sexism, homophobia, I'm so proud of people in the land of the so-called free. She was suspended for 3 days for wearing that. So I think the chill that started at the top went down not only to law enforcement, but right into the schools of this country.
Thank you very much for the call. David in Fenimore is with us now. Hi, David.
Hi. Good morning. Yeah, I have a little story that myself, I sent a letter to the editor after the attack in New York in September and after we invaded Iraq. And our local county, Grant County Herald Independent, refused to publish my letter, which I thought was, I was really surprised. But I have my own hypothesis in terms of the war and the repression of our own individual rights, and that is that the suppression of our rights is not just a result or a consequence of it, that was part of the strategy in the first place. That was part of the reason that they wanted to go to war. It was that they conspired from the time Bush was placed in office, that so that they could come back and say, well, we're in at a time, we're in war now, we're at war, so we have to suppress your rights to be able to protect your rights, basically, you know. And also, I'd just like to support or congratulate the people that had the demonstration in Madison over the last couple of days with the theater. I thought that was really good, and especially the word that the man used on his interview with the local press was how un-American this administration is. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, David. Not sure. What do you think, Matt? I mean, papers can sift and winnow letters to the editor. That's not necessarily government action against David, is it?
Right. And, we refuse. Mm. I mean, we decide which letters we're going to publish in the Progressive and which not. And it's not always a case of political censorship, though. If the paper usually publishes every letter it gets or almost every letter it gets, then that would be another story. So maybe David has a point there. It was censorship, the goal to censor or repress our rights, a reason for Bush going to war? I'm not sure of that. I don't think so. I think more likely it was oil and also geopolitical reasons and Bush's vanities and Oedipal complexes and all that going on. But certainly he has seized on this fact that he's a war president, as he calls himself, to repress our rights and to put in one fiat after another or one executive order after another or pass one bill after another or ignore one piece of legislation after another to trample on our rights. So I think David's correct on that.
Thanks, David, for the call. An email from Mike in Whitefish Bay who says, I don't understand all the complaining. 9/11 has changed only one thing in my life. I now have to take off my shoes at airport security. That's it. I feel I have not lost any rights since 9/11. My life has not changed. Repression, laughable. What do you think, Matt?
Well, it's laughable until it's you who or a loved one who is being repressed. I mean, and Mike doesn't know whether his phone calls are being monitored by the NSA or not. And, you know, if Mike wants to hold out a sign in front of his yard against the Bush administration, what if someone comes and tears it down? Or what if, you know, he's told by the city that he can't have that sign, like some people in this book have been told? And then the question is, you know, how many rights do you have? I mean, when you're not expressing or utilizing your rights, then maybe you're not seeing that your rights are being threatened.
Yeah. He's maybe not dissenting against the administration right now. Maureen in Burlington, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I just wanted to comment that I'm kudos to you guys for always letting us say our piece, but that Bush can be insulated by the Secret Service with our tax dollars for him not to know what the people think or how the people feel, so he can continue in his little fairy tale world that he's doing the right thing, because he doesn't have a clue what the little people, the real people, are thinking. And I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
Well, Maureen, I think you hit the nail on the head here. I mean, what Bush and Cheney envisioned for themselves is kind of like what the kings during Middle Ages saw of their own power, that they would go through the countryside and they wanted their vassals to go clear the streets and the pathways and the carriage routes from any scruffy peasants who might disagree with them. They want to be able to go through their kingdom without fear of being criticized at all. And the fact that the Secret Service is engaged in this and that the White House advance team is engaged in this shows just how hostile Bush and Cheney are to our fundamental rights.
Thank you, Maureen. Alan in Delavan is with us now. Hi, Alan.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. What I'm afraid of is another Kristallnacht. Anybody who, I was born 5 years after World War II, but anybody who's an intellectual or doesn't think the way I think will be punished, shunned, whatever. It's sad. It's really sad, and I'll take my comment off the air.
Well, Alan is concerned about things getting worse, and the Bush administration really seizing on things like they like the Nazis did. That was the comparison there. You know, I try to resist the temptation that things are getting worse or approaching that. I don't think we're approaching Nazi Germany here, but I do think there's the possibility of things getting worse here. There is the possibility of martial law in this country if we're attacked. And the reason I say that is a person who died last week was named Wayne Downing. He was deputy to Condoleezza Rice at the National Security Council, and he retired after about 2 years. And the Washington Post did a long story that included a quotation or two from Wayne Downing. One quote that appeared in paragraph 41 from Wayne Downing said exactly this: if we're attacked again next time by terrorists with weapons of mass destruction, we're going to have to impose martial law in this country. And Ted Koppel wanted a show about it, and his guests also concluded that if we're attacked again, we're going to have to impose martial law. And so the idea that this discussion is going on for martial law is something I think we need to pay attention to, and the time to try to protest against any moves that might be on the table to install martial law in this country. The time to do that is now, because once they've imposed martial law, of course, it'd be too late.
But we might get arrested.
Well, I think, you know, if we're worried, and this is a big thing, if we're worried because of all these stories that I'm telling that, you know, something's going to happen to us, then we already have surrendered our rights. Then we don't have our rights anymore. Then Bush and Cheney have already succeeded in taking our rights. We need to exercise our rights while we have them. If the government or a law enforcement agency is going to trample on them, we need to sue. And a lot of people in this book have sued and won. It's possible to win. We can't just sit back there and be afraid of our government and of law enforcement. That's what they want us to feel, because if we're so afraid, they can get away with anything.
Steve in Oshkosh is with us now. Hi, Steve.
Good morning. And I ask Matt, in all earnestness, based on a 2002 missile strike ordered by Bush in Yemen that killed an American citizen. And I fail to see where, say, at the Toronto International Film Festival, if you or I happen to be attending, why he couldn't order a missile strike. I mean, I understand the political fallout, but is he not free to kill whomever he wants anywhere in the world and say he's protecting our freedom?
Well, that might seem extreme, Steve, but actually there was a Bush administration official who was interviewed in Newsweek who said that Bush had the right to go kill anybody in the United States, including a U.S. citizen. He could assassinate U.S. citizens in the United States if he determined on his own that they were al-Qaeda. That makes you comfortable, doesn't it?
That puts a chill down your spine. David in Ironwood, hi, you're on the air.
That is a good, very good point. And the fact that he determined, the fact that they isolate themselves, they're no longer listening to people at all, I mean, it gets this insulated thing, and they make their own decisions, and they're no longer relying on the best and the brightest of America. And they're taking our rights away, and they think what they have is right. And that's setting a precedent. So these people who agree with Bush, well, just think someone against your ideology will get into power. And if they use a precedent that Bush sets, they could get their rights really oppressed.
Well, this is the thing that surprises me about supporters of Bush right now, that they support all these repressive actions that he's taken. You know, as the caller says, you know, what's going to happen if and when a Democrat is elected president? Are they going to like that person to be able to issue signing statements on these laws that pass that say, you know, I, Hillary Clinton, am not going to enforce this law to the extent that it interferes with my rights as commander in chief? I mean, I can hear the outcry already, but that is the precedent that Bush has set.
Roberto in Green Bay. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, you guys. Your show rocks. A two-parter. One, would this happen under a Democratic president? And two, is this a neocon think tank policy?
Well, Roberto, I think a Democratic president may also have repressed our rights to one degree or another. I don't think to this degree, because I think Bush and Cheney are far out on the repressive edge, even for Republicans. I mean, there are a lot of libertarian Republicans who are aghast at what Bush has been doing, including Ron Paul, who's running for president on the Republican ticket. So, I think this is unusual, though certainly I wasn't a huge fan of the Clinton administration, but I think they've taken things really in a rightward direction here as far as our rights go.
Yeah, so in our final minute, the moral of the story is stand up for your rights?
Yeah, we need to stand up for our rights. We've got to lobby our legislators to try to tear down some of these bricks in the edifice of repression, especially the Patriot Act and the Military Commissions Act. I think what we need is impeachment of Bush and Cheney, not for partisan reasons, but to hold them accountable and to tell the next person who occupies the White House that they can't act like this. Otherwise, we're leaving a loaded gun in the front drawer of the desk in the Oval Office for the next president to shoot more holes into the Constitution. And well, we can't let that happen.
We'll talk more about that the next time you're here, Matt. Thanks very much. Matt Rothschild, editor of The Progressive, a frequent guest with us, and also the author of You Have No Rights, Stories of America in an Age of Repression. And Matt will be giving a free public talk about his book tomorrow night at the Overture Center in Madison in the Wisconsin studio at 7 o'clock. Thanks to him for being here. Thanks to you for calling in and listening. And thanks to Leo Duran for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.